converted to Islam. From the very beginning, he faced a tough challenge and, by reacting to this crime, showed he had wholeheartedly and consciously connected himself to the Muslim community. At that time, he supported and backed Palestinians with emphatic and supportive posts on his social media pages. As usual, this expression of opinion caused Zionist groups to become flustered and take a stance against Irving, as any celebrity's support for Palestine is considered a threat to the legitimacy of the Israeli regime. For example, a pro-Zionist Twitter page named Sports Rabbi wrote that Kyrie Irving needs to get an education before opining on the Middle East. Additionally, the American Zionist magazine, The Nation, headlined that Kyrie Irving's comments on Palestine are a big deal. The magazine further writes that basketball savant has called for the bombs to stop, as well as new international humanism. Irving did not merely settle for silent reactions on social media. In a press conference, he responded to sports journalists' questions by saying that recent events in Palestine had caused him to lose much of his sports focus and that basketball had lost its importance to him at that time.
How did it feel to be, again, so close to full strength as you get ready to wrap up the season?
Felt good, you know, just to get out there, play the game that we love. But, you know, for me personally, I'm not really... I'm not going to lie to you guys. A lot of stuff is going on in this world, and basketball is just not the most important thing to me right now. There's a lot of stuff going on overseas. All my people are still in bondage all across the world, and there's a lot of dehumanization going on. So, you know, I apologize if I'm not going to be focused on y'all questions. You know, it's just too much going on in the world for me to just be talking about basketball. Like, I focus on this shit 24/7 most of the time, but it's just too much going on in this world not to address. You know, it's sad to see this shit going on. And I just try to pay it forward as best I can by speaking out, by doing things behind the scenes, you know, just living by action, really. And it's a unique balance because you're in a platform or you're in an industry where a lot of people that are surrounding it or observe it don't really get a chance to say what they really believe in. You know, they have to play it safe, or they have to worry about money, or they have to worry about what people are saying. You know, so many people are criticizing what they say, and really you just gotta say it's just not right. What's going on in the world? We're so divided and separated. It's just getting ridiculous now. You know, so many people are just choosing one side or the other, and I'm just here to say I'm on the side with God. You know, I'm siding with God. Just treat every human being the way you expect to be treated, no matter who they are, what they look like, where they come from. If you truly believe in standing as one, then you would stand with us and fighting against us.
One of Irving's most controversial stances dates back to October 27, 2022, when he expressed support for the Black Hebrew Israelite doctrine. Irving shared a documentary titled Hebrews to Negroes, Wake Up Black America in one of his tweets. The 2018 film, based on a book of the same name, promotes anti-Zionist ideology of the Black Hebrew Israelites. The Black Hebrew Israelites are a group that claims to be the true descendants of the ancient Israelites, asserting that real Jews are black people. They argue that modern-day Jews are not genuine descendants of the Israelites. The global Jewish community does not recognize this group as Jewish and often treats them harshly. Interestingly, the illegitimate Israeli regime, itself an occupying force, does not even allow the minority Black Hebrew community to remain in Palestine, a situation that can be seen as one of history's situational comedies. Irving's supportive post about the Black Hebrew minority was enough to spark significant controversy, with Zionists accusing him of anti-Semitism. The situation escalated to the point where pro-Zionist lobbies pressured Amazon to remove the book and film he Hebrews to Negroes, Wake Up Black America from its platform. However, Amazon has not taken such action thus far.
All eyes are on Amazon, which has yet to take down an anti-Semitic film shared by a well-known basketball player. I spoke to the director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, who says companies should not be profiting off hate.
After pressure from pro-Zionist lobbies, the Brooklyn Nets announced that they would suspend their cooperation with this player for at least 5 games without pay. However, the penalty and Irving's strategic and intelligent apology, which did not show any retreat from his original stance, did not satisfy the Zionists. They consider the waves created by such figures as normalizing anti-Semitism. Various pressure from Zionist lobbies to the FBI director and the NBA commissioner did not cause Irving to back down from his original idea.
FBI Director Christopher Wray recently said the Bureau is fighting against anti-Semitism, saying more than 60% of religious hate crimes are sparked by anti-Semitism.
Now, the threats may be coming from all sides, but we're hitting back at them full force, and we're doing it from multiple FBI programs.
After this unprecedented amount of pressure, Irving again tweeted on October 29, 2022, stating that the anti-Semitic label that is being pushed on him is not justified, adding, "I embrace and want to learn from all walks of life and religions." Irving denied any religious bias and defended his initial tweet. He said that history is not meant to be hidden from anyone. "I'm not going to stand down on anything that I believe in. I'm only going to get stronger because I'm not alone. I have a whole army around me." These words from Irving were enough for the Black Hebrew Israelites to take to the streets in support of Irving. They showed what Irving meant by gaining the strength of a whole army. The support for Irving has shown that the era of Zionist lobbies dominating unchallenged is over. With increased public awareness, an independent movement has emerged in Western societies that can act as a shield for anti-Zionist voices against Zionist pressure. The Zionist struggle to silence the wave Irving started was not without reason. The Irving wave achieved its impact, drawing in one of America's most famous rappers, Kanye West, who has 32 million followers. By defending Irving's ideas, West brought even more attention to the controversy. West, who has previously faced criticism from Israelis and Zionist lobbies for his anti-Zionist statements, was once again accused of anti-Semitism and faced boycotts from certain brands.
"I could say anti-Semitic things and Adidas can't drop me. Now what? Now what?"
Of course, it was clear that Kanye West, like Irving, had thought through his stance carefully. In a clever tweet, he responded to all criticism and labels, writing, "I actually cannot be anti-Semitic because black people are actually Jews." He added, "You guys," meaning the Zionists, "have toyed with me and try to blackball anyone who opposes your goals." West also posed a thought-provoking question. "Have you ever wondered why, among all ethnic groups in history, Jews have consistently faced oppression or anti-Semitism from host societies?" He argued that Judaism as a religion or ethnicity is not the core issue. "Ordinary Jews, like followers of other religions and ethnicities, live peacefully in various societies. The problem arises when a religious or ethnic group refuses to coexist equally with others and instead seeks to separate itself, demanding a larger share of public resources." Naturally, any group attempting this path will face resistance from the majority. Throughout history, Zionists have shown that nationality holds no meaning for them. Regardless of where they were born or raised, they ultimately pursue the interests of exclusivist Judaism. Protecting their inner circle and establishing a greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates takes precedence over everything else. Today, Israelis, as the infantries of the Zionist movement, have turned a deaf ear to global logic and protests. As Chinese statesmen have said, Israel has made itself deaf. This is previously why Jews have historically been accused of disloyalty and betrayal by various societies and ethnic groups, leading to their expulsion. As Jamie Foxx, the famous American actor and singer, stated, "Jews killed Christ. What do you think they'll do to you?" Foxx shared this statement with the hashtags fake friends and fake love, referring to alliances with Zionism. Of course, it is important to note that there are Jews, such as the Jewish community in Iran, who remain loyal to their homeland and distance themselves from Zionism, especially in a land where Zionist media giants have portrayed Iran as an anti-Semitic country to the world. During the height of the 2023 Gaza War, BBC Persian published a report titled, "What is the Difference Between Anti-Semitism and Anti-Zionism?" This approach by the BBC Persian was noteworthy because acknowledging the distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism was previously unheard of in mainstream Western media. This discourse was essentially unrecognized, as it could dismantle the Zionist strategy of labeling and discrediting supporters of Palestine. If, in the past, the refusal of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the famous American basketball player, to visit the occupied territories was seen as a symbolic slam dunk against Israel, today, Kyrie Irving's support is like a game-winning three-pointer in the final seconds. Al-Quds, the first Qibla for Muslims and the holiest city for Jews and Christians, has now become a political focal point for the world and even a gateway to spiritual enlightenment. An example is Yang, a talented American basketball player. After participating in the Palestinian Basketball League and experiencing the hospitality of Palestinians, he decided to convert to Islam during Ramadan and change his name to Ahmed. It is likely that this trend of global figures, especially athletes and artists, embracing Islam, which provokes the enemies of global peace, leading to occasional waves of Quran burnings in Western countries. The ancient land of Iran has always been a cradle of legends who stood against the darkness. Ali Dai, the second highest goal scorer in the world after Ronaldo, is one of the thousands of legends. During the 2014 Gaza War, he tied his dreams to those of Gaza's children, wishing them a future without bombs. A wish that remains unfulfilled to this day. In just 45 days of the 2023 Gaza War, nearly 5,000 children, one child every 7 minutes, was killed by the Zionist regime. On November 19, 2023, the 44th day of the Gaza War, Israel began its day not with bombs of resistance, but with a bombshell news of Kyrie Irving. Irving appeared at a press conference wearing a Palestinian keffiyeh, surprising the journalists. The Israeli newspaper Ma'ariv headlined, "Dressed in a keffiyeh, Kyrie Irving once again shows solidarity with Palestinians." The paper added that the Dallas Star, who had previously expressed anti-Zionist views and supported Palestinian struggles, appeared before and after the game against Milwaukee in traditional Arab attire to pay tribute to Gaza. The Al-Aqsa Flood Liberation Operation has achieved significant outcomes. This operation, which broke through the walls of Gaza, often referred to as the world's largest open-air prison, can aptly be described as a prison break. Just a month before this operation, we witnessed a daily and escalating trend of Quran burnings in Western countries, nations that claim to respect all religions. 40 days later, verses from the Quran, specifically from the Surah At-Tawbah, were recited openly at the United Nations.
I saw the modern manifestation of what is found in the Surah Al-Tawbah of the Holy Quran, and I quote, "And if anyone seeks your protection, then grant him protection so that he can hear the words of God, and then escort him where he can be secure," end of quote.
This is particularly striking given the United Nations, the very institution that facilitated the creation of the illegitimate Israeli state, has remained silent in the face of Quran burnings. The recent events surrounding the Al-Aqsa flood operation sent a clear message to Zionist supporters. Do not bet on a losing horse, especially if that horse has been wounded in the flood. The Zionists are terrified and hope that the fate of this horse does not resemble that of the sick and losing horses in Hollywood films where their American owners deliver the final shot.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. Imam Ali alayhi salam treated all human beings to be equal in the matter of rights and responsibilities, and he did not fix any limit in this behalf of equality among all human beings. And if he did fix any such limits, it was fixed keeping in mind the interests of the public in general, the people. And when we study the character of Imam Ali, we clearly see that he did not violate this freedom, the freedom of the people, the freedom of the public, the freedom in any of his laws, orders, rules, or regulations, and he always kept the public welfare in his view, in all his actions. He dealt equal treatment to both his friends and his foes.
Allah, ya Allah, la ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's to my brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we are speaking about the holy month of Ramadan, and we are speaking about His Eminence, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. What a beautiful month to be witnessing, and what a beautiful month to be speaking about His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam. And of course, what a beautiful month that unfortunately is coming down towards its end. Of course, in advance, we hope that the believers, wherever they are, have a safe and secure and faithful Eid day, the Eid celebration all across the world. You know, one of the things that we learn from His Eminence Imam Ali alayhi salam is, of course, two things that I want to, inshallah, speak about, if Allah permits. And, of course, this is something that, you know, even though it is the end of the holy month of Ramadan, or we're coming close to the end of the holy month of Ramadan, it is something that we need to really kind of, you know, keep in our minds, inshallah. And as we move forwards, you know, to continue these things that we have learned. And this is, of course, something that over multiple years we have very humbly put forth, is that those things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan, that we should continue them throughout the rest of the year with Allah's permission and Allah's grace. So one thing is the protection and the help of the oppressed. The support of the oppressed is something that Imam Ali alayhi salam most definitely has shown throughout his life, whether it is physically defending the oppressed, whether it is ideologically helping the oppressed, because teaching a person knowledge is also freeing a human being from the shackles of oppression. Evil and tyranny and Satan and the satanic forces, they oppress people physically, yes, but also ideologically and mentally and spiritually, by misinformation, by lies, by propaganda, and by keeping them dumb and keeping them ignorant. And so, yes, providing knowledge to people out there, truth and justice, and providing them with the reality of the pure Muhammadan Islam is a form of helping the oppressed to get out of this situation of oppression. Of course, the other one is the physical defense of the oppressed from the physical oppression of the oppressors. And Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, this is something he did his whole life, was defending the oppressed masses and the disenfranchised and the downtrodden. And so in this holy month of Ramadan, before it ends, of course, the issue of Palestine is a very serious issue. These are people that are at the ultimate peak of oppression, well over 1 year, where they have been bombed left and right, men, women, children killed mercilessly, hospitals, schools, refugee camps, homes, civilian infrastructure, everything practically destroyed. It'll take decades to rebuild. It'll take tens of billions of dollars to be able to rebuild these broken, and this oppression continues. And so with the values of the holy month of Ramadan and with the values of Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is our duty all across the world to defend these Palestinian people and to defend these oppressed people. The last thing, because I had promised I wanted to speak about too, of course, is that in this holy month of Ramadan, when we were facing and experiencing hunger and thirst, this hunger and thirst, which we voluntarily took upon ourselves, is something that the poor and needy masses of the world don't voluntarily do, but they are forced into poverty. Poverty, malnutrition, famine, these are things that are very serious and are going and are occurring across the world. And as a Muslim, it is our duty to try to deal with this situation as well, to help the poor, help the needy. This is something that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan. Inshallah, if Allah wills, and if all of you pray for all of us,
we will be at your service next year in another holy month of Ramadan. A very beautiful lesson indeed, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on. Forgive me for everything I've done in the light, for everything I've done in the night that I thought wasn't wrong. But I know that you are really loving, you are really caring. I can't realize.
Now let's listen to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, who's going to talk about today's topic.
So he's saying, take care of all of these things. Take care of your limbs. Take care of your responsibilities. Why? Because you don't want the end of the month to come, right? And you say, oh, this is another Ramadan I messed up. This is another Ramadan I could have done so much more. And I hope Allah, keeps me again so I could get to another Ramadan, which we might mess up again. You see? So we have to take Ramadan just like Alcoholics Anonymous, one step at a time. Every day, we renew our niyyah. Every day, every second, we remind ourselves that this is the holy month. And definitely, we will be, inshallah, successful. So as guests of Allah, we are honored. And being honored means being recognized in one's being. Being recognized in one's being. In other words, as a guest, being merely present at the banquet gives us an honor, confers upon us some kind of respectability. And there are many hadith that talk about us getting benefits over things that we have no control over, and over things that we have control over, but we get more than we should get by those things that we have control over. For example, you have a guest in your house, and you treat that guest with respect. You give that guest honor. Even sometimes that guest might have a tendency or a behavior you might not like. This is as being a guest. Just your presence in the guest room, a presence at the banquet, gives you an honor that is conferred to your very being. And there's a hadith of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa'ale that talks about this, that talks about us getting benefits, getting blessings for those things that we have absolutely no control over. Of course, bearing in mind that you, me, we are the architects of the quality of that banquet that we are attending.
At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائي بحق محمد.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan, and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master, and my Lord. Welcome, my friends. Keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the folly, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, To My Brother. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on iranradio.ir with me, Mohammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me, brother.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, salam and greeting to you.
Alaykum salam. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
My pleasure to have you both back in the studio, actually, and always pick your brains about movies and your take on the criticism of these movies that we choose, actually, to criticize in such a program, Viewpoints. Well, one of those movies that we decided to work on is called Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Well, it's featuring Liam Neeson, Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver, to just name a few. IMDb gives this movie 7.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes 83%, which is a very high grade, actually. And Letterboxd 4 out of 5. The box office for this movie was $23.8 US million dollars. The whole movie is about Christian missionaries sent out to Japan to propagate, and Rodriguez and group, two Catholic missionaries, travel to Japan in search of their missing mentor, Freira, who is believed to have been promoting Catholicism by going against the law, obviously, in Japan. But before we move on to the questions, as is always the par for the course, for this program, Viewpoints on Iran Radio, we normally take a listen to a short trailer of this movie, Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints. So stay tuned.
Our Lord said to them, "Go ye into the whole world and preach the gospel to every living creature."
Ferreira is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step into high danger.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IranRadio.ir. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Syed Abdullah, what is the central theme of Silence, this movie?
I think the name says it all. I'd say the central theme is about the persecution of Christians in time of the Inquisitor, as they call it, where Christianity was put to death, if I can use a word, because Japan didn't look at Christianity very highly, and the Christians were persecuted, whether the believers themselves or the priests who went there, they were persecuted. And as always, which is a very common theme in every Christian movie, is that all the priests and all the high figures, they always complain to God, "Where the hell are you? Why aren't you helping us? Why aren't you doing something?" So the priests and all the Christians, I don't know why they always complaining about God. If either you have faith in this God of yours, and you shut up and take it like men, and accepted that faith has sacrifices, or if you start complaining about God, what kind of God are you complaining to? Like, even us as Muslims, right? We know that whatever happens, we say, "Well, God wills it," and we shut up about it.
Yeah.
We don't see us complaining to God, like, "Why you know all this is happening and you don't do anything about it?" We say it's the will of God, right? We submit to that fact. Where sadly, Christianity are not submitting to that,
and they point fingers to God.
It's like, "You're silent."
But of course, you're talking about like that kind of Christian viewpoint toward everything, right? But we are talking about Martin Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese is not very happy about the Christian thing. Exactly. But what he does, he's trying to project to us what Christians are like. So it's not just him. In any other movie, even in the biblical term itself, there's always complaining about God.
Even Jesus was complaining on the cross.
Exactly. So everyone's complaining.
Those movies.
So and Martin Scorsese is like, "Look, dude, look, what's with your faith? If it's all by complaining, then what kind of God are you guys worshiping? So at the end, he's not bringing this concept of silence from thin air, that God is silent to this massacre, to this torture.
Evil.
He's not bringing it from thin air. He's bringing it from the actual belief of Christianity itself.
Mm-hmm, I see.
So this was the theme of the movie, that your God doesn't do jack all.
Yeah, we're going to get back to this concept because this is very, very important. And this is something like one of those controversies or misconceptions which are put forth, especially by the atheists, towards or against religious beliefs and believers, by the way. Brother Yasser, how does this movie portray the concept of apostasy? And what is apostasy? And what's the, you know, law against it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So I think the movie portrays it in a very weak light. I mean, belief is not something that can be shown by physical actions alone. It is a form of, or a state of the heart. It is a state of the soul. That just because somebody steps on a particular ornament or a particular symbol, does it make the person not believe in that person anymore?
Yes.
I mean, and also to put it like, you know, is your religion so, shallow that these symbols represent your religion? Is that what it is? That the religion is based on symbols? Or is it a higher thing?
Yeah.
Religion is not just based on symbols.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a higher belief and actually giving your entire existence and your entire being to that religion. Even if on the outside, yes, it may be difficult because obviously we understand that there must be a collaboration and a coordination and an association between what happens on the outside and what happens on the inside of a human being. That when one of these things are not in in sync with one another, obviously there's a thing, but obviously what is more important is what is inside. In order to protect what is inside, if I show a certain thing outwardly and to save myself or to save other religions, you know, it doesn't shouldn't be considered as apostasy. Apostasy is truly, absolutely denying a faith that you had. For example, I believe in God now, and all the way out tomorrow, the next hour, I didn't know such thing as God anymore. I start drinking alcohol, I do this and do that. That is apostasy. Not just because I show an outward hatred towards a particular symbol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it showed apostasy to be something very shallow. It's something big. It's not something that you just by stepping on a particular symbol or breaking a particular thing. Yeah, yes, it may be difficult for some people to do that because of, as I mentioned, the conformity of the esoteric and the exoteric nature and realms of a human being.
Right.
That's not apostasy. Apostasy is really, truly not denying what you believed in.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break while listening to a part of or trailer of the movie Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, the Movie Critique Program on iranradio.ir. Stay with us.
The price for your glory is their suffering.
It's too dangerous.
We asked for this mission.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on Iran Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Well, Syed Abdullah, what role does cultural context play in the film's religious narrative, especially we are talking about Japan? And to my understanding, the Far Eastern countries don't take it very easily, like when it comes to religion, right?
Yeah. So obviously the culture really shapes the faith that you're in. So throughout the movie, for example, they try to kind of, because Japanese themselves, they have their own
religion,
culture. No, they have their own culture.
Yeah, but by the way, by religion, I mean the Christian or Western religion, because they obviously they tend to have their own way of life, right?
Yeah.
Or
so
religion, Buddhism, Hinduism.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So what you can see throughout the movie that with these priests who they were trying to bring this Christian theology forward, the Japanese people themselves, they were having trouble navigating their way through it because they have their own customs, mm-hmm. And their culture, mm-hmm. in terms of dealing with deities, for example, right?
Yes.
So even when the lady was trying to make a confession at the beginning, the guy was like, what? Keep repeating what you're saying, because mm-hmm. obviously he didn't understand that, for example, in certain things in their culture should not be said.
Yes.
Whether confession or not confession.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to put all these images of Christ and this and that. They're trying to bring it to them so they can brainwash them into the Christian mentality. But obviously that wasn't very successful endeavor. So you can see culture played a big role. And one of the reasons that they themselves, Japanese people, did not accept Christianity is because it collided so much so with their culture. Because their culture itself was based on respect, was based on honor, was based on all these things that Christianity already trying to bring forward. It's like, what are you trying to teach me? I already have these things.
So they
bow to the ground in order to greet you. So
they shouldn't have crashed into each other. Like they should
no,
have taken
they,
it.
They found no need for it.
Uh-huh.
When you're already practicing something, I'm saying to you, oh, bro, practice this. I'm like, I'm already doing it.
Uh-huh.
Why are you trying to sell me something
more,
I already have?
It was more an anti-imperialist thing. The Japanese were also very anti-imperial.
Uh-huh.
That they, like you mentioned it in your question,
yeah.
They were Eastern. We
exactly.
have our own Eastern religion, which was at that time Buddhism or Shinto. They were Shinto.
Right, Shinto.
Yeah,
Shinto.
Or they found the, what's the word for, I forgot it now. They were Tao. They found Taoism.
Yeah.
They followed Taoism, right? Shinto Taoism. So they followed. They say, why? Because you also understand the cultural aspect that at that time, the Europeans were coming. Either economically, socially, politically, and all of that. Right? Or we want to bring democracy to the world.
Mm.
So why are you taking all our particular stances and things, and you now you're also bringing your religion for us.
Uh-huh.
We don't
I
want
see.
It.
And they're very preservative in terms of their culture. The Japanese, even until today, they're not the type of people that would give up their culture very quickly.
Right.
If you go to the Middle East, for example, they will sell their culture like with 5 cents.
Yeah.
Right. They will give it up very quickly for a burger.
Yeah.
Japanese, like no. We're very traditional. We're not going to give it up for anybody.
I see. Brother Yasser, what significance does the movie? I mean, Silence of God, which is tried to be depicted in this movie, right? Even the title suggests it. Hold in this movie, what role, what significance?
I mean, that's the thing. I think Seth also mentioned it. God is not going to speak to everybody directly. That is not the purpose of belief. God will speak to his prophets, his messengers, certain individuals, right? God has given you scripture. He has spoken to you.
Yes.
And why don't you go to the scripture and see what he's saying?
Mm-hmm.
And God has already spoken to you. Why are you looking for something special? You're not special. And that's something we all look at. We are special. No, you're not special. If you're special, you'll be chosen as a prophet. But you're not special. The prophet is special. Therefore, you were chosen as a prophet. He is God's vessel by which he communicates to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left behind you scripture. He left behind for you teachings. God is already speaking through you through those teachings.
Right.
God is never silent. Right? Do you even fathom the point that God is silent, that God is not helping you? I mean, for example, and this is also something very amusing about the movie. There was a scene where these two came out of the hut and they saw a falcon. And this is a sign of God.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, nature is no more a sign of God for you. God is speaking to you through the falcon. All of a sudden, you forget.
Yes.
I
mean,
Thank you very much. But this is another...
It's a very controversial issue, and I want to actually address this, but inshallah...
Because there was another
upcoming
movie
episodes.
We did, right? Martin Scorsese,
yes.
The Last Passion of the Christ, which is based on a book.
Yes.
This is also based on a book.
Mm.
Silence is also based on a book written by a Japanese author.
I see.
So Scorsese based both of his Christian movies on fiction books.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Well, we are going to continue, actually, the criticism of this movie, inshallah, in the upcoming episodes. Well, thank you very much for listening to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on iranradio.ir, in which we try to criticize the movie Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Thank you very much.
Everyone eagerly awaited the speech on the inaugural Al Quds Day. Among the speakers, an unexpected figure took to the podium before the sermons began. Palestinian ambassador in Iran, Hani Al Hussein, reading out Yasser Arafat's letter, August 17, 1979. This is the first Al Quds Day in the world, and its first speaker is the Palestinian ambassador. On Sunday morning, February 10th, 1979, Tehran was poised to experience an extraordinary day, one that would resonate beyond its borders. The archive radio program that was being broadcast was abruptly interrupted, and an audio file began to play. The victory of the Iranian Revolution marked a significant turning point, unlike the 1953 coup when the former monarch returned from Italy. This time, there was no possibility of his return to Iran. However, the country was not yet fully stabilized. The interim government had not implemented any substantial measures, and fundamental decisions were still pending due to the unstable governmental structure.
Have you ever seen anything like this in your life?
No, never. And I always wished that I would be living when I see today like this.
Very good. Good luck to you.
Nevertheless, within just a week, the new Iranian government made one of its first serious decisions, signifying a swift move towards establishing order and governance. On February 19, 1979, in an official announcement by the interim Iranian government, the El Al Airlines office was shuttered, and it ordered the eviction of all 32 of its employees from Iran. El Al, an Israeli flag carrier airline, had been operating the Mehrabad-Ben-Gurion route since 1960 with daily flights. Following the announcement, Iran officially severed its ties with Israel. Before making any other decisions in its international relations, the fledgling revolution in Iran first excluded Israel from its diplomatic ties. Many might think that hostility towards Israel emerged as a product of the Iranian revolution, but Iran's deep-seated issues with Israel were among the most significant reasons for the revolution itself. In September 1941, Iran was occupied by Allied forces from both the north and the south. They deposed the king and replaced him with his son, a move clearly intended to serve their own interests. 7 years later, in 1948, a group of armed Jewish immigrants, with the approval of the UK and the US, declared independence in Palestine. This declaration of independence resembled a nation-building effort rather than a pursuit of popular freedom, as native inhabitants were killed by militia forces. The drive for independence entailed the systematic elimination of the native Palestinian population. During this period, Iranian politicians, reflecting the will of the people, strongly opposed any partition of Palestine between Jews and non-Jewish residents. This opposition was so pronounced that Iran's representative at the United Nations voted against the partition plan for Palestine. The Iranian envoy was tasked with officially declaring the clear stance of the imperial government of Iran. On that day, the United Nations was set to vote on the partitioning of Palestine into Jewish and Muslim regions. Until then, Palestine had been predominantly the land of Muslim and Arab people. Though Jews of various nationalities had been migrating there for some time, facilitated by the UK. At this point, Iran was an occupied country following World War II, and the Shah was widely seen as a puppet. However, the Iranian people's sensitivity towards the Al-Aqsa Mosque compelled the Shah's envoy at the UN to unequivocally state that the Iranian monarchy was firmly opposed to the division. This declaration shocked British politicians. The US president stepped in to address the situation, and Mohammad Reza was subsequently invited to Washington. In November 1949, the young king of Iran traveled to the United States to meet with President Harry Truman.
With the keenest anticipation to all that I have to experience here in the greatest of the democracies in a free world.
During this visit, Truman convinced Mohammad Reza that he needed to recognize Israel. Upon his return, the king communicated these instructions to his government. On March 5, 1950, the Iranian government officially recognized Israel. Hossein Makki, in his parliamentary speeches, revealed that Israel had bribed Iran's prime minister, Mohammad Sayed, to support Israel's independence. The Times of Israel confirmed this bribe, amounting to $400,000. At that time, the exchange rate was approximately 30 riyals per dollar, and the cost of a square meter of land near Ferdowsi Square in Tehran was around 1,000 tumans. Essentially, the bribe allowed the Shah to purchase 1,000 square meters of prime land near Ferdowsi Square. Thus, the Shah of Iran was accused of selling the Palestinian cause for a tiny plot of land in Tehran. Amid the Palestinian conflict with Israel, the recognition of Israel by an Islamic country served as a green light, bolstering Israel's motivation to occupy Palestine. After the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, Syria and Palestine were left without a strong claimant, particularly after Ataturk came to power in Turkey and aligned with the West. When Iran officially supported Israel's independence, the Arab people near Palestine found themselves isolated in their struggle against Israel. The Arab-Israeli war erupted, and Iran, being the first Muslim country to recognize Israel, faced backlash from Arab and Muslim nations. Meanwhile, internal pressure mounted within Iran as the populace expressed their dissatisfaction with the government's decision. Protests erupted across the country, with clerics and elders of the Grand Bazaar leading the opposition and forming the core of the people's resistance. Criticisms against Saeed in Iran escalated to the point where the parliament appointed a new prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh. Mossadegh, a lawmaker for four terms, and one of Saeed's critics, was appointed with an absolute majority of votes in the parliament. The story of Mossadegh, the deposed prime minister, and the Shah is well known. While public opinion today often marks the conflict between Mossadegh and the Shah as starting in July 1953, the main rifts emerged from the very beginning of his premiership. On July 17, 1951, less than 2 months into Mossadegh's tenure as prime minister, Foreign Minister Mohazibeh-Dowleh Kazemi announced the government's decision to close the Iranian consulate general in Israel. He stated that he had not and would not accept an envoy from Israel in Iran. The severance of ties was not what the Americans expected from the Shah of Iran. As events unfolded, opposition to Mossadegh's government intensified. Every project and issue became an excuse to protest and oppose him, with his government's actions being magnified to increase the pressure against him. Ultimately, the final provocative move for Mossadegh's removal from politics occurred on August 19, 1953. While there are several reasons for Mossadegh's removal, it all began when he decided to cut ties with Israel. This was confirmed after Mossadegh's dismissal from the premiership and the formation of a new government when Iran resumed its relations with Israel. With Iran's support for Israel and the Shah's green light, Israel's occupation of Palestine and neighboring countries continued to expand until the conflict reached Egypt. Amid these circumstances, Gamal Abdel Nasser, a popular figure in the Arab world, took command of the Egyptian army and confronted the Israeli invasion. With Israel isolated and Muslim states remaining silent, Abdel Nasser's resistance against Israel turned him into a hero in the Arab world. Leveraging the support of the Egyptian people, Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal, which had been under British control for many years. The nationalization aimed to challenge Israel as much as possible. If Israel's oil supplies were cut off and its maritime connections disrupted, its defeat would be assured. While Nasser sought various ways to bring Israel to its knees, the Shah of Iran once again emerged as a savior for the Israelis.